listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, and Mike Papantonio on the line with us, America's lawyer, host of Ring of Fire Radio, ringoffireradio.com, and the Ring of Fire TV show on Free Speech TV as well. Hey, Pap, how you doing?
Tom, how are you?
Great. So, Florida turns down medical marijuana, although it did get a majority of the vote, and the elections were just downright weird all over the country. I'm curious your thoughts on all this stuff.
Well, I guess the macro picture is that the real battle this year, the GOP battle, for example, was as much an inside battle, inside party battle, as it was against the Democrats. And the reason that's important is because of where that leaves us now. Understand that the GOP had to rid themselves of the Tea Party lunatics who they understood were causing their grand old party to implode. And they were fairly successful in doing that during the primaries. A few moonbats got through like Joni Ernst, but the GOP made progress. So that's important to us because now what we're going to see is we're going to see the Wall Street Democrats, the third way Democrats, the banker types, we're going to see them do the same thing to the liberal progressive Democrats like we're seeing in Florida already. It's already begun. The goal is going to be to make the Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders types appear so odd and so aberrational that Hillary Clinton, she begins to look like the last best hope for the Democrats. So they're fully engaged. It's going to be the rebirth of the Clintonite corporate love affair that began with Bill and NAFTA and CAFTA and TTP and every other trade agreement. We're going to see all that come to the surface. And liberal progressive voices are going to be marginalized, just like the GOP has done with the Tea Party. That's where we are. That we're already seeing that movement in Florida.
Well, I guess it's a good time for progressive talk radio, then. Our voices are needed more than ever.
It is.
So your thoughts on the medical marijuana thing in Florida?
Well, what happened was, I mean, understand it passed it's rarely failed. What ended up happening here is the Republicans saw medical marijuana as a way to scare the hell out of older voters. I mean, the blue hairs came out in droves because they were scared of the ad campaign that was put on about medical marijuana. You know, they're going to be in your backyard. They're going to be dealing drugs in your backyard. Your children, your grandchildren are all going to be using marijuana. It was a very effective scare tactic. And the irony to it all was that at one point that was something that was meant to bring out Democratic voters. And I think it did. But I think it energized, kind of the white hairs to get out there and say, oh my God, this is scary. So it was kind of a double.
So they did a reefer madness thing on medical marijuana?
Well, what ended up happening on medical marijuana was exactly that. They turned it into this is an invitation for crime. And they argued that the amendment, and I look at the amendment, I do have to agree. The amendment was poorly written. How it got past the Supreme Court I thought was remarkable. But there should be an amendment that we should have legalized marijuana in this state. I mean, every state that's looking at this is buying into this idea that it's a great idea. Because, look, marijuana, legalization of marijuana, just to put it in perspective. You had Oregon, Alaska, Washington, D.C. legalized marijuana and possession of marijuana, not just for medical, but for any kind of purpose. And when you compare the initiatives that have existed in other states, what this just invited an immunity for the people who might become dealers. That was the pitch. Even though it wasn't completely honest, you could read it. You could say, well, maybe it does really say that. And that was the ad campaign that we saw down here. It really did rally. It rallied fearful Republicans to get out there when they might have stayed at home.
Remarkable. I there was an interesting piece. Anything else you wanted to toss in here before I start provoking you?
Well, I think what I wanted to talk about, I just don't think we can miss the fact that this full Clinton frontal march to deregulate, we're going to see it. Mm-hmm. Wall Street's thieves are back, full tilt. We're going to see it continue. Prosecution of corporate criminals, another Bill Clinton and Obama standstill that we saw with them. You're going to see the voices against them, the Elizabeth Warrens, the Bernie Sanders, marginalized. Labor, Bill Clinton approach was, you're on your own, thanks for the money, but you're on your own. That's going to continue. The federal court appointments of the silk stocking, corporate defense, anti-consumer centrist judges, yes men, we're going to see that continue. And all of this is going to be, it has credibility now in the eyes of the Democratic leadership, and they're going to do everything they can to really create this new world of the third way Wall Street Democrat, this new power, and marginalize people like me and you, Tom, and people might stand for progressive ideas.
What's profoundly weird about this, Pep, is that the candidates who embraced traditional Democratic Party values, yes, progressive values, who talked about raising the minimum wage, who talked about strengthening organized labor, who talked about protecting the environment, who talked about strengthening Social Security rather than privatizing it, who talked about expanding Medicaid and Medicare rather than voucherizing them, who talked about public schools and ending this march toward privatization. I mean, literally, I could come up with a list of 20 things here.
Right.
That's the stuff Al Franken ran on, and he won walking away. That's the stuff Tom Wolf ran on. He won walking away. That's the stuff that Jeff Merkley ran on. He won walking away. You know, this is in a variety of different states where conservative Dems and middle-of-the-road Democrats were losing.
Well, that's right. I mean, look, case in point, increasing minimum wage. Think about this. Arkansas, for God's sake, South Dakota, Alaska, Nebraska raised their minimum wage. San Francisco
raised with like 70% of the vote.
Exactly. $15 per hour in San Francisco. But this is the point I'm making, Tom. What is happening now is there's going to be the smoke and mirrors notion, gee whiz, we need Hillary Clinton now more than ever because she stands for the centrist way. What did we hear this president say when he stalks? What did he say? I hear you. That was his message. I hear you. And now what we're going to see, this guy who's already an incredible moderate to right winger, just say, look, you're right. I have to go along with you. We're going to see no fight back. We're going to see the very worst of what we used to think was the worst the Democrats going to get. It's going to get worse. It's going to become the party of Joe Manchin and Hillary Clinton. Even though, as you point out, where the liberals had a voice. How about this? Voter expanded paid sick leave, for God's sakes. Now, California, it passes. New Jersey, it passes. And it wasn't just a small margin. And these were liberal ideas, but nevertheless, you're going to have leadership, this nepotism that exists in the Democratic Party, like we're seeing in Florida right now, you know, where these appointments are made for leadership. They embrace Bill Clinton. They still believe that Bill Clinton is relevant for what we need to become. And they say that because they're trying to empower Hillary Clinton going into this election. They're trying to marginalize people like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and a whole host of people who believe everything those people are talking about.
So
we're in a war within the party.
Yeah, we have just a minute left. The Green Party's not going to save us from this. And this is relatively inevitable, I think. So doesn't the question become how do we influence, how do we have a significant voice in the Democratic Party the way that the Tea Party did with the Republican Party? And I disagree that the Tea Party went away. I give you a list of nine major candidates who all won. They just stopped using Tea Party rhetoric.
Yes, that's accurate. But in-house fight was the point I was trying to make.
Yeah.
Look, haven't we tried to do what you're saying already? When Obama came into office, didn't we say this is our day?
I don't think we've tried doing it since Martin Luther King was banging on Lyndon Johnson's door.
Okay, well, I just remember the day of change when we heard this president stand up.
Oh, I think we thought we were getting it.
Yeah,
but I don't
yeah.
think we showed up to force it.
Oh, we got it, but it was not what I thought we were going to get.
Yeah. You understand that? Just my point, maybe my point is too subtle. I don't know. Maybe it's airy fairy. Maybe it just. I don't know. Anyhow, Mike Papantonio, it's always always great talking with you, Pap. Thanks so much for being with us.
Talk to you.
RingofFireRadio.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And be sure to check out Mike Papantonio's website, RingofFireRadio.com. 15 minutes past the hour. Mike Papantonio is still on the line with us. What's up on Free Speech TV this weekend, Pap, on Ring of Fire TV on Sunday at noon?
Well, this week, Farron Cousins is going to be, he's going to be hosting the program. He's going to be talking about the midterm election results. He has the best analysis of what all this means, just brilliant analysis. He's going to be talking about where the Democratic Party should move, but where they probably won't move. We'll also be talking about the corporate attempts to enact tort reform. Now that the corporatists are back in charge, we're going to see a full frontal attack. They're going to try to take tort reform to a whole new level where the courthouse is closed to consumers and open to corporations. We're going to explain why banks are no longer loaning money to people who help the economy and how Wall Street banks are strangling local banks to death so they can move into that space. And we're going to talk about the decline of America's collective IQ. It is real. It's not just words. We're not making this up. Voters are so less informed than ever. And the impact is deplorable. And that includes millennials, by the way.
Well, you know who I think is responsible for that is the damn party. The Democratic Party has not in years talked about traditional Democratic Party values.
No, they haven't since Bill. I know that here's when Bill Clinton came into office, Tom, he convinced the American public, the Democrats in the American public, that the only way we could win was to look Republican, to morph into Republican. Right now, right now what we see is Hillary, for example, trying to walk both sides of that. She sees the popularity of people like Elizabeth Warren, who stand for something, or Bernie Sanders, who stand for something. Sherrod Brown stands for something. These people who are out there, and all of a sudden the populist message is making a lot of sense for her to look at what happened nationally and ignore what happened. But she has simply embraced what she learned from Bill.
Do you think it's possible, and maybe this is far out, but Bill was president. Well, first of all, I think everybody in America needs to go Google the New Covenant speech. This was Bill's stump speech that he ran on in 1992. And it was FDR. I mean, he ran on a very, very progressive vision, and then he governed as if he was Richard Nixon. But that said, he started out relatively progressive, and then the Republicans took the House, you know, the Gingrich Revolution, and suddenly he's, you know, let's do away with welfare, let's, you know, now the era of big government is over and all this other kind of nonsense. Do you think that he might have done that because his wife was saying, hey, I want to have a political future, too, and I know about Monica, and you are going to make it happen for me, damn it. And so he said, that, hey, the best way to open the door for Hillary a few years down the road to become a senator and maybe president someday is for me to suck up to these guys.
Hillary has wanted to be president since she was in the Girl Scouts.
Yeah.
So that is very possible. And what I don't think it's that remote. Listen, there was a shift. There was a sea change all of a sudden where we woke up and we said, who is this guy that has this love affair with people like Robert Rubin and Geithner and Summers and Wall Street and all the ugliest of the ilk on Wall Street? Who is this guy? And he realized what he was looking at is sustainability of the Democratic Party in his mind. In my mind, I think it's caused the demise of the Democratic Party. If at any point there is a chance for an independent to win it right now.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Mike Papantonio, America's lawyer, attorney with Levin Papantonio, host of Ring of Fire Radio and Ring of Fire TV, right here on Free Speech TV every Sunday at noon, and it replays throughout the week. Check your listings. Pap, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Always great talking to you. We'll be back. Okay, I've had 36 hours, I guess, you know, a solid 24 hours to digest the consequences of the election. And I had some meditation time this morning. My dentist, Jun Kim, who has been on this program a couple times, answering your questions. I used to go to a dentist here in D.C. who advertised in the movies, don't ever do that, right? He accidentally punched through a molar, and so it had to become a crown, and then he put the wrong size crown on, and so it's crushing my teeth, and they're all starting to collapse on top of each other. And so I went in this morning, and June cut out that old crown without any anesthetic. It's amazing. So I've got a temporary crown for a couple of weeks. But the point is, I had about an hour and a half in the dentist chair to meditate on this, and this is when it hit me. The Republicans, let me just try to frame what really happened over the last year. And it's really what has happened over the last 6 years. And how the Democratic Party and the Democratic leadership so blew it on this. And I think, you know, with the best of intentions, this is not a, you know, I'm not trying to do circular firing squad. If anybody from the Democratic Party is listening, I hope you will take what I have to say as constructive advice rather than as, angry criticism or something like that, because I want to see the party succeed. And that is that on January 20th, 2009, the night that Obama was sworn in, we had the caucus room conspiracy happening here in Washington, D.C., where Paul Ryan, Eric Cantor, Kevin McCarthy, Pete Sessions, Jeb Hensling, Pete Hoekstra, Dan Lundgren, Jim DeMint, John Kyle, Tom Coburn, Bob Corker, and John Ensign got together at the caucus room restaurant along with Newt Gingrich and Frank Luntz and planned the destruction of not just the Obama presidency, but the Democratic Party. In fact, Newt, as he walked out of the meeting, said to a reporter, or said to somebody who said it to Robert Draper, wrote about this in his book, The Tea Party Comes to Town, Newt Gingrich said, "You will see in tonight's meeting the seeds of the 2012 Republican victory." Well, he was 2 years off. But what they swore to each other they would do is obstruct anything that the president tried to do. Give him nothing. Pete Sessions said they were going to become the Taliban. Kevin McCarthy said, "We are going to oppose him on every single piece of legislation, even legislation that the Republicans historically had supported. And in fact, at that moment, were supporting. They were going to pull their support." Why? Because their plan in 2012 and 2014 was to run on the failure of the president to accomplish anything, which they were going to create. Right. We are going to create a 6-year environment where nothing happens in Washington, D.C., where it's all gridlock all the time. But it's entirely actually Republican obstruction. But we know, we Republicans know, that the stupid, screwed up corporate media in America will never call us out because they're always looking for these nonsense false equivalencies. I'm doing so hard not inserting profanity into this. That they'll simply say, you know, the corporate media, and I saw this morning. After 6 years of obstruction, of 6 years of gridlock, all is gridlock. No, it's Republican obstruction. They don't even use the word obstruction. They use the word gridlock. It's not gridlock. It's Republican obstruction. So their strategy was 6 years, make the country hurt. Knowing that the media will not call them on it, and apparently knowing that the Democratic Party would not call them on it either. And this is the big mistake. You got that Harry Truman clip? This is the big mistake. Either one. The longer one is fine. This is the big mistake that the Democrats made in not every single time there was a filibuster. They should have been doing theater in front of the United States Congress. They should have been out there with bars that look like jail bars and you know, locking themselves up or whatever. I mean, there is somebody who's better at guerrilla theater than me could easily come up with what they could do to draw attention of the press to the fact that the Republicans were filibustering again. But the Democrats never did that. Here's what Harry Truman had to say about this kind of thing.
"Now I want to say something very important to you about this issue of morality in government. It is just as immoral to use the lawmaking power of the government to enrich the few at the expense of the many as it is to steal money from the public treasury. That is stealing money from the public treasury. Legislation that favored the greed of monopoly and the trickery of Wall Street was a form of corruption that did the country four times as much harm as Teapot Dome ever did. Private selfish interests are always trying to corrupt the government in this way. Powerful financial groups are always trying to get favors for themselves. Now, the Democratic administration has been fighting against these efforts to corrupt the powers of government. We haven't always won, but we have never surrendered, and we never will."
So this is a party standing for something.
"For all these years, we've been fighting to use our natural resources for the benefit of the public. to develop our forests and our public oil reserves and our water power for the benefit of all, to raise the incomes of all our citizens, to protect the farmer and the worker against the power of monopoly. And where have the Republicans been in this fight for morality in government? Do they come out and vote with us to keep the special interests from robbing the public? Not at all. Most of them are on the other side. The same thing when you come to the question of the conduct of government officials. The Republicans make a great whoop and holler about the honesty of federal employees, but they are usually the first to show up in a government office asking for special favors for private interests and in raising Cain if they don't get them. These Republican gentlemen can't have it both ways. They can't be for morality on Tuesday and Thursday and then be for special privileges for their clients on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
So my message to the Democratic Party is what you should have been doing for the last 6 years. You didn't need to come up with anything new. Just look at Harry Truman. It worked.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
When you've got people voting against a personhood amendment, at the same time they're voting to elect a United States senator who co-sponsored the personhood amendment, you know you need to be informing your voters. Defending America from the weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you. David Bossie is one of the guys who was the leaders of Citizens United, the actual organization that took the case to the Supreme Court, after which the Supreme Court decision is named. And if you want to hear from a guy who's like all in favor of billionaires being able to buy mind-boggling amounts of advertising to promote their particular candidates, you know, somebody who's in bed with the billionaires. And I don't know if David Bossie's a rich guy himself or if he's just loving living off their money. Honestly, don't know. But here's what he had to say yesterday about the impact of Justice Scalia and Justice Kennedy and Justice Roberts and Justice Alito and Justice Thomas's decision in Citizens United. Here it is.
Citizens United, our Supreme Court case, leveled the playing field, and we're very proud of the impact that that had in last night's elections. A robust conversation, which is what a level playing field allows, really creates an opportunity for the American people to get information and make good decisions.
Yeah, right. David's been a guest on this program a number of times. Here's what he's saying, basically. Billionaires can put $7 billion into an election. You can put 50 bucks in if you've got it. Most of us don't have it, right? Only 30% of Americans have a job where they can actually pay all their bills. 70% of Americans are sliding deeper into debt every day. Half of Americans can't even find a full-time job that pays all their bills. Well, 70% of Americans can't find a full-time job that pays all their bills. Half of Americans, even with multiple jobs, can't pay all their bills. But hey, if you're living on Social Security and you want your voice heard, you too can write a check for $20 million to buy a TV ad, to buy a bunch of TV ads and compete with the Koch brothers, because the playing field's level now. Oh, you don't have $20 million? Well, sorry about that. But the playing field is level. If you had $20 million, you could spend it. What kind of twisted back guano logic is this? I mean, how bizarre? Anyway, Umberto in Miami, Florida. Hey, thanks for watching. What's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, listen, can you hear me all right? Because I'm on a cell phone.
Yeah, I hear you just fine.
Okay, and just to let you know right off the bat, the Free Speech TV signal completely collapsed on my DirecTV system. I can't watch you to face. I'm only talking to you on the phone. If there's anybody out there who has also lost their signal, please let their systems know.
Okay.
But anyway,
I've got four other Free Speech TV callers on the board, so I think that we'll find out. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Shane is looking at it right now. He said we're live on Free Speech TV. No problem. So back to you, Umberto. What the topic you called about?
Okay. The reason I believe, one of the major reasons why I believe the Democrats are having such major problems, especially in the midterm elections, and not just in 2010, now in 2014, again, they're always complaining that they're not motivating the African-American vote to turn out, or the Hispanic vote, or the female vote, this and that vote. I look at it from a totally different perspective, and that is from economics. The largest group of people in this country who are not turning out to vote because, plain simply, the Democrats are not motivating them enough to go out and vote. They don't feel that the Democrats are actually messaging what they are feeling and what their issues are. It's not the middle class, Tom. It is the hundreds of millions of people in this country who are poor and part of the struggling poor working class. They are not feeling from the Democratic Party the kind of social and economic justice message.
I absolutely agree. That was my whole rant for the first half hour, was that the Democratic Party, instead of talking about traditional Democratic Party values, and maybe the reason that they're not is because they have some members who have repudiated those values. And those people are the ones who are losing elections, by the way. The ones who are trying to be, you know, middle of the road, sort of Republican, sort of Democratic. You know, why don't you vote for me? And then, you know, as Harry Truman said, if the American electorate is presented with a Republican who is actually a Republican and a Democrat who behaves like a Republican, they'll choose the Republican every time. People want the genuine article.
What's even worse, Tom, is that by not actually messaging a social and economic justice platform and message, there are many of these very poor working class people who, on the other hand, are voting Republican.
Right. Or,
and in doing so, they're hurting themselves. And again, the Democratic Party, Tom, has to move more decisively towards the progressive left wing. If they're not going to do that, and if they're going to move more towards this wishy-washy third way, corporatist agenda, which might happen with Hillary Clinton in 2016, we're going to see a lot more losses. All right, Tom, have a good day.
Yeah, thanks, Umberto. I totally agree with you. The third way is the death of the Democratic Party. Paul in Chicago. Hey, Paul, what's up? Paul? Anita in San Antonio, Texas. Anita, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, Tom, but I've also lost my signal.
Oh, really?
So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what's up. Yeah, I lost it, you know, like 10 minutes ago.
Oh, that's interesting. But that must be a which network are you watching on?
Free Speech TV.
On Dish or Direct?
Oh, I'm sorry, on Direct.
On Direct. Okay. We'll keep an eye on that because we're looking at the Free Speech TV web stream and it looks just fine. So, anyhow, back to you, Anita.
Yeah, first of all, I don't agree with Pap about Jody Ernst being the only Tea Partier that got through, first of all. I think there were a number of them that got through. I think the Republicans did exactly what they said they were going to do. They said they were going to change their packaging. They weren't going to change their policy.
Yeah, the postmortem that they had 2 years ago. The conclusion of it was, we don't need to change who we are or what we do or what we, you know, we just need to change what we say so that people don't,
right.
You know, so when Cory Gardner runs, You end up with Mara Liasson and NPR going, oh, he's really a moderate. He's really not in favor of personhood. Ignore the fact that he's the co-sponsor of the personhood amendment in the U.S. House of Representatives. To this day, he's still proudly the co-sponsor of that amendment. We're going to pretend that that's not the case because he's repackaged himself.
Yeah, the mainstream media were definitely complicit because they should have brought up a lot of things that Jody Ernst has said, all of these people.
But the Democratic Party should have been bringing all these things up.
Well, they should have. You know, and also, I wonder why the Democratic Party doesn't talk more about wages. I mean, we talk about raising the minimum wage, but not about just raising wages and the connection between unions and higher wages.
Right. Right.
We don't talk about that enough.
No, we don't. And it's because the Democratic Party has not, really since Lyndon Johnson, the Democratic Party since LBJ has not been the party, you know, the party of the average working person. It's, you know, the deal with the devil that was made in the 90s, I would say, by and large, by many people in the Democratic Party, certainly not all, by some people in the Democratic Party, was we'll get into bed with the banksters. We'll get into bed with the mortgage brokers. We'll get into bed with the big transnational corporations. We'll get into bed with General Electric, which owns MSNBC. We'll get into bed with these guys and play nice. And in exchange for that, they'll throw their support to us in elections and they'll give us campaign cash. And then, you know, what became a convenience in the 90s became a necessity after 2010, after Citizens United. And it's all, it's just, you know, the Democratic Party needs to stand up and stand for traditional Democratic values. Anita, thank you for the call. Well said. Tony in Stafford, Virginia. Hey, Tony. Tony? Hey, you're on the air.
Hey, yeah, I lost your signal. I'm listening to XM Radio.
Yeah. Oh, our signal did drop in the last half hour. Our ISDN line is provided by Verizon, and we keep contacting them and saying, hey, you know, our ISDN to our radio stations dies, and they go, oh, everything looks good to us. You know, there is no more customer service in this country. Anyhow, back to you, Tony. You should have a signal right now.
Anyway, I've been talking to a lot of people who got Obamacare last year when it came out.
Yeah.
They said, and these are diehard Republicans, they said that's the best thing Obama did in his presidency.
Yeah, yeah.
Why didn't these candidates run with Obamacare?
Because they're, I don't know.
You know, why didn't they run with it and say, well, if we get elected, this is how we will improve it.
Hopefully the Democratic Party is noticing right now that the Democrats who ran as Barack Obama's friend, right? From Tom Wolf to Al Franken to, I mean, right down the list. The Democrats who, Jeff Merkley, the Democrats who ran as I'm with Obama, and beyond that even, I'm more progressive than Obama. Those Democrats won big. The Democrats who said, like Alison Grimes, oh, I don't agree with Obama on a lot of things. And Mary Landrieu, you know, we shouldn't be raising our minimum wage. Those Democrats lost, and Mary Landrieu hasn't lost yet, but mark my words, she will. And she will because she's not willing to embrace the Democratic politics. I'm telling you, this is, you know, she's from the region of Huey Long. If these candidates and this party was simply to take a progressive populist position, the position that Republicans like Teddy Roosevelt and Taft once took. I mean, if the new modern Democratic Party can't do anything unless Republicans have done it first, here's where to look. 1901 to 1912, 1916. Look at that era, please. You know, the Taft presidency and the first Roosevelt presidency. Become progressive populists. You will start winning elections like there's no tomorrow. Tony, thank you for the call. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back with more right after this. It's the Tom Hartman Program. Check out our newly rebooted and redesigned website over at TomHartman.com. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Howard, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network. Got a signal, Howard?
Yes, I do, and the Dish Network is fine.
Great.
Tom, I had a heart attack on October the 1st, and I had open-heart surgery on October the 8th. On October the 14th, they put one of those defibrillators in my chest to guard my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm finally home. After going through all the therapy, and I want to say to you that whoever is listening, that there is a thing called an echocardiogram. Are you familiar with that?
I am. It's basically an ultrasound of the beating heart, a real time ultrasound.
Right, and after the echocardiogram was completed, a doctor walked into my room and said, Howard, you've had a heart attack, and it's ongoing. We've got to get you out of here. Because they didn't have open-heart surgery at this hospital.
Right.
They had to move me to another hospital.
Right.
So, anyways, I'm only saying to you this because I hope other listeners will. I think anybody over the age of 50, should if they can do it, see a cardiologist and see the condition of their heart.
Yeah, especially if they eat meat.
Well, the type of all the food is bad for our heart, because of the sugar.
Yep.
And well, yeah. Okay, Tom, that's
I'm not blaming you for eating meat, Howard. I'm just saying, you know, and there's a lot of vegetarians whose hearts are in really bad shape too because they eat eggs and cheese, and that, you know, this stuff clogs up the heart. There's an incredible website that's got a lot of great information on this. Over, it's called nutritionfacts.org. It's run by a guy named Dr. Gardner. Nutritionfacts.org. But you're right. And did Obamacare help you out?
Well, I'm fortunate that I'm over 65 and I have Medicare.
Okay. So Medicare that Paul Ryan wants to voucherize helped you out.
Oh, I would be dead.
Yeah.
If it was for him, I wouldn't, because they couldn't do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It couldn't be done.
That's amazing. Well, I'm glad, Howard. I have so many friends. My dad had the quadruple bypass surgery. My wife's brother just had it about a year and a half ago. By the way, after he had that surgery, he went on a total 100% plant-based diet. No meat, no butter, no milk, no cheese, no eggs. And a year and a half later, well, 3 months later, he was off all of the drugs. And a year and a half later, his heart is as healthy as it ever was. And in this little support group of people who all went through open heart surgery with him, he's the only one who's not back on all the drugs, the statins and the blood pressure medications and all that other stuff. So there is light at the end of the tunnel. There, you know, it's, yeah, and I wish you the very best, Howard. I really do. Thank you for calling, and thanks for sharing your story with us. We'll be right back. It's 10 minutes before the hour. You know, what the Republicans did in 2009 is they said, well, in fact, there's an article in today's an op-ed, the official editorial of the editorial boards of the New York Times. They point out that in 2009, Mitch McConnell vowed to create, quote, an inventory of losses to damage Mr. Obama, end quote. And they say for precisely the results achieved on Tuesday. And then they go on, you know, virtually all Democratic candidates distance themselves from Obama. But, you know, why? Because he had been wounded. Why had he been wounded? Because the Republicans had been obstructing him for 6 years and the Democrats had not been standing with him. And I was wondering, when I can't get to sleep at night or when I wake up in the middle of the night and I want to get back to sleep, I listen to BBC's World News podcast. And I listened to this last night at midnight, and then I listened to it again at 3 a.m. And it was how BBC kicked off their news coverage, but it was from President Obama's press conference yesterday. Here's what he had to say.
I'm committed to making sure that I measure ideas not by whether they are from Democrats or Republicans, but whether they work for the American people.
And I'm laying there going, wait a minute, did he just say I'm no longer with the Democrats? Did he just say, you know, screw this party? I'm going to make my own decisions on what's a good idea and what's not. I'm going to set the legislative agenda for this White House. And if so, does that mean he's to the left or to the right of the Democratic Party? It just raised the question. I honestly don't know the answers, but it rather surprised me to hear a Democratic president say, I'm going to make decisions not based on what's good for my party or even what my party has to say. I'm going to make decisions based on my own best judgment. I mean, it's kind of a noble thing, I suppose. Or maybe it's kind of dumb politically. I believe it's dumb politically. I think what he should be saying is, you know, let's see what the Republicans have to say. And by the way, the Democratic Party has a lot of good ideas. TC in Dallas, Texas. Hey, TC, what's up?
Hey, good morning, Tom. By the way, I'm experiencing technical difficulties, too.
Yeah, you're watching DirecTV. That's the network that's having problems. So what's up?
I was just wanted to talk to you about the obstruction president since he's been in office. Now, I heard you, you know, you talk about the 15 guys. I knew about them already that made it sure that they weren't going to work with this man in any on anything, right?
Right, and this was Republican leadership.
I know, but that's what I can't understand. See, it just don't make sense to me. Now, you know, like, and also I heard on this morning, I was watching on Morning Joe in another show, and I heard when he called to congratulate McConnell,
mm-hmm.
they said he wasn't available.
Right.
They snubbed him. You know, I mean, this is just disrespect.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, look, I served in military. I had four of my brothers and myself. We was all in the military at the same time. We served this country greatly. But I'm telling you, I think America is going down the tubes.
Are you saying that, hang on just a second here, TC. Are you saying that when Joe Scarborough called McConnell or when President Obama called McConnell? When President Obama called Mitch McConnell, they said, sorry, he can't take the call?
They said he wasn't available, yes.
Holy
that's
cow.
True.
Yeah, that's serious disrespect.
That is disrespect. But he's always had disrespect.
Yeah.
You know, and my representative in Congress was one of the people that was at in that meeting when he was being inaugurated, Pete Sessions.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I had a real long talk with him last Friday.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
Good on you.
I called his office, and he answered the phone.
Wow.
And what happened is I had been getting a lot of flyers from him,
mm-hmm.
you know, about, you know, the Obama was taking the country into a third world country, about the kids coming across the border, and they were saying they were 17, and they didn't have to be checked and all this kind of mess. I mean, it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so I just called him. I just called him up. When he answered the phone, he said, this is Pete Sessions. I said, is this you? He said, yes, it is. He said, what do you got to ask me? I said, one thing I want to ask you, why do you lie so much?
Whoa. What did he say?
I said, God. And we had about a 45 minutes to an hour conversation.
Wow.
And I told him, I got the flyers here. I could prove them to you. I could read them off to you. I got three of them. And the reason why I got them, my grandson lives in San Antonio. He went to school down there.
Yeah.
For some reason, they think he's a Republican, so they sent him to all to. But he still uses my home address here in Dallas.
It's a shame you didn't record that conversation. That would be a fascinating little bit of tape.
Oh, well, he didn't talk too much for one simple reason.
Yeah.
Because everything he would tell me, I had an answer for him.
Yeah.
You know, because he was talking about, you know, how they send jobs overseas and reason why they don't bring the stuff back over here because they want to tax it when they bring it back.
Right.
I said, well, wait a minute. Now, I said, when the jobs go overseas and the stuff is made over there, then when they bring it back, they get it made for little or nothing over there, and then they bring it back, then they sell it for $300 or $400 over here when it will only cost $7 or so to be have it made over there.
Yeah, yeah.
And I gave him a perfect example. In 1985, I was still in the Air Guard. I was doing my annual training in Seoul, South Korea. This is when Filas and all those things came out.
Mm-hmm.
I had seven purses, seven pair of Reebok tennis shoes, and the Felix warm-up jackets made over there. All of that stuff cost me less than $300.
Wow.
I sent it back here to Dallas. My wife took it to Dillard's up in Valley View Mall, and it was identically the same thing.
Yeah.
No problem. But I got it from – that's why I don't buy any of the big-time designer stuff. I don't buy any of it.
Yeah.
Because I know what they're paying for it here, and then what it was made for over there. You know, I don't believe that. I don't buy it.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you. TC, thanks a lot for the call, and good on you for calling Pete Sessions. That's amazing. We'll be right back. In fact, Ralph Nader is going to be back with us right after the break, and Brad Friedman will be with us an hour from now. But in another 5 minutes, Ralph Nader, his thoughts on what happened on Tuesday. Stick around.
Listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Well, class, what have we learned? What we've learned is that Illinois, Arkansas, Nebraska, South Dakota, Alaska, every state where there was a minimum wage increase on the ballot, it won. Wherever there was pot on the ballot, it won. Wherever there was anti-abortion measures on the ballot, they lost. Wherever there were fracking bans on the ballot, Texas, California, Ohio, they won. Paid sick time won in Massachusetts, California, Connecticut, New Jersey. Reducing felonies run in California, gun control run in Washington State, bail reform won in New Jersey, getting money out of politics, 80% win in Ripon, Wisconsin, the home of the Republican Party. Seattle voted to tax themselves to pay for preschool for the poor. California, Berkeley, California, passes a tax on soda. The Democrats who embraced the president, or who at least embraced progressive measures like Al Franken and Jeff Merkley, won walking away, and the Democrats who were the conservatives failed. What does this tell us? Let's ask one of the most astute political observers in our nation, Ralph Nader, a consumer advocate and author of his most recent book, Unstoppable, The Emerging Left-Right Alliance to Dismantle the Corporate State. His website, Nader.org. Ralph Nader, welcome back, sir.
Thank you, Tom.
It's always great having you on. I'm curious your dissection of what happened on Tuesday.
Well, it's what you actually said. The wishy-washy senators like Senator Pryor and Senator Landrieu, who's about to lose the runoff, and other senators who lost because, number one, they ran away from the Democratic Party and President Obama, but they didn't stand for anything. All they kept saying, in effect, was, here's how we blur the difference between the Democrats and my Republican opponents. And Senator Pryor was a perfect example of that. He got six visits from Bill Clinton. And when Bill Clinton comes in to support someone in Arkansas, he goes to all kinds of towns and cities. He's not just, you know, hotel press conferences. So he went into at least 25 areas, and Pryor lost big. So the lesson basically is you have to stand for something that relates to the question, whose side are you on, big business or the people? And then you fill in the blanks by responding to what people think are their necessities and their legitimate interests where they work, live, and raise their children. And that means in the future, months now, the big opportunity is to put forward a public works project, repairing and remodeling and renovating America's public facilities, the usual public transit, bridges, highways, schools, community health clinics, libraries, sewage, water systems, ports, airports. Many of them are crumbling. The American Society of Civil Engineers annual report puts the need of deferred maintenance at about $3 trillion. Now, that's a lot of jobs that cannot be exported to China or elsewhere. And they improve safety, efficiency, and facilities of living in communities all over the country. So if the Democrats go for a left-right alliance on this, because the local Chamber of Commerce are for it, the local workers and unions are for it, the local small businesses are for repairing their communities, of course.
Yeah.
So it's a unified issue. The remaining question is, how do they pay for it? One, by getting rid of crony capitalism or corporate welfare subsidies, handouts, giveaways. That's a left-right alliance. Two, by making some of these giant corporations pay their fair share of taxes, like Apple and General Electric are making millions, tens of billions of dollars, and paying very little or no federal income tax.
Right.
That's a lot of small business support for that. And then the third is cutting back on empire and the bloated, corrupt military contracting budget, putting this money into repairing, renovating, and creating new public facilities all over the country. That's the way to put Senator McConnell and Speaker Boehner completely on the defensive, where they look back where they came from, and they see this left-right alliance, this Union Workers Chamber of Commerce alliance, and that is an unstoppable alliance. That's what I take coming out of this miserable election.
Yeah, I'm with you. And the title of Ralph Nader's new book is Unstoppable. No coincidence there. And I think you've nailed it. I would add, if I may, respectfully, the old cliche, if you don't stand for anything, you'll fall. If you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. And B, I would add to that infrastructure list, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, Ralph Nader. I would add to that infrastructure list what I think is the most critical infrastructure in the United States that has been completely ignored, which is our intellectual infrastructure. Our young people, our schools are going to hell in a handbasket, all this privatization and all this stuff. We've got $1.3 trillion in student loan debt when, you know, Germany just banned tuition on the part of colleges, said it's illegal now to charge tuition in Germany. One of the Financial Times this morning, I was reading the Financial Times, they're saying, hey, you know, now that the Republicans are in charge, it's a good time to invest in for-profit colleges because we can exploit the kids even more. Your thoughts?
That's right. You know, I mean, the youngsters are profit centers for gouging corporations and Department of Education. Let's not forget that. They're making money off student loans, too.
Yep, this is wrong.
Not as bad as, you know, the for-profit universities. I proposed a few months ago an equitable exchange here, and that is we should tax Wall Street transaction taxes, raise $300 billion, and start launching a jubilee to erase the student loan. Why do I say this? Because Wall Street's crash in 2008-2009 stripped the young generation of Americans of economic opportunity that is still continuing and metastasizing. The law, inadequate jobs, the student loan albatross, the inability to get income at age 30 or age 35 to buy homes, all this comes from this crash of Wall Street. And so the argument should be in Congress, let's make Wall Street redeem itself partially by being taxed on its stock transaction tax, a less than one half of 1% will raise $300 billion, such as the volume of derivatives, et cetera, trillions of dollars of derivatives every year. And that goes to erase the student loan to free youngsters from this albatross that sometimes continues into their 30s, 40s, 50s. It just rolls over and starts accreting in interest, et cetera. And for the youngsters who don't have student loans, Wall Street will pay for apprenticeships and technical assistance to get them adequate employment. That's going to be another left-right issue, and Congress would have to at least consider that one.
Yeah. Have you had any conversations with anybody in the Democratic Party about changing their messaging and their strategies?
Yeah, I talked to Harry Reid about 3.5 weeks ago. He was coming out of a dentist office in Nevada, and I said, you know, the minimum wage issue should be nationalized. I know you're talking about it finally. The Democrats took a long time, but not talking enough about it. And he said, yeah, the president could nationalize this and barnstorm around the country. And he told me he was going to call the president. Well, what happened to the president is, he took these unpopularity polls far too seriously. He should have been a give 'em hell Harry, like Harry Truman, upsetting Dewey in 1948 when he was low in the polls. Truman, he went all over on trains and give 'em hell Harry,
yeah. And
he won.
I was thinking the same thing. I played a Harry Truman.
He went to these wealthy salons from New York to Los Angeles to raise money from Fat Cats for the Democratic Party. And then he disappeared. I mean, he spent 2 weeks doing this. That's a lot of time for a president in the last month or and a half. Instead, he should have been barnstorming with some of those 30 million workers who are making less today than they made, the workers made in 1968, adjusted for inflation.
Yeah.
He didn't do that, so he contributed to this defeat as well. But we can't forget that the voters, Tom, are not doing their homework.
Yeah.
They're not doing their homework, and when voters don't do their homework on the record of the candidate, they're very susceptible to propaganda.
There you go. Hang on.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Ralph Nader, Nader.org is the website. His newest book, Unstoppable, the Emerging Left-Right Alliance to Dismantle the Corporate State. Thank you, Ralph.
Thank you, Tom.
Great talking with you as always. And welcome back. Jamal in Albuquerque, New Mexico, watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network. Hey, Jamal, what's up?
Hi. You know something really very, very precarious over here in Albuquerque is that I'm handed this ballot, and I'm looking up and down, and most of the, you know, all the city judicial positions and judges and what have you, it's so, the list is so extensive. I don't know how anybody can, I myself can't seem to, higher education, can't seem to understand a lot of where does all these fall in place. I mean, what, did any of these people have anything that they've done wrong, done well, and should they be, discontinued or something like that? There's no information about any individual on there about their, good and bad things they've done or whatever in the position. It just lists of names that nobody knows anything about. And I see all these beautiful, nice Hispanic people. I wonder, and some barely spoke English coming to vote. I just wonder, do you understand? I don't understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I was talking yesterday about how when we lived in Oregon and we had vote by mail, we used to sit with the with Willamette Week, the local newspaper, and go through the voter guide and say, okay, you know, it's now I understand. Here's the list, you know. But this is also, Jamal, this is why I think that we should be publishing the lists, the voter lists, who voted and who didn't, so that people will feel some social pressure to vote. And once they've decided to vote, they will bother to educate themselves about the issues. You know, it's like, you know, step one. So what do you think?
Because I myself hold a lot of I go to local laundromats where a lot of these Hispanic people are, and I ask them if they understood and this and that. And every one of them, I said, are you voting? Yeah. Do you know what's going on? No.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's a tough one. I got it. Jamal, thank you very much for the call. I'm totally with you. Is it Dava in Berryville, Arkansas?
Or? Yes, Dava.
Dava. Hey, you're on the air. What's up?
My conversation has to do very much with what Ralph Nader was talking about and a practical way of bringing about a more progressive agenda on the Democratic Party. Our party mechanism needs to change. We need to get on the pro-corporate line. That is not what Democrats are about.
Right.
And I have three positions that need to change. They are the two chairs for the Congressional Party and the, Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Right, the head of the DNC.
Are on the DNC chairs.
Yeah, she is going. And is already gone. And Steve Israel just got canned as the head of the DCCC. So I think those changes are happening. I don't know if you were talking about Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi. They're not going anywhere. But
well, the people need to start motivating for changes.
Yeah.
And I suggest that we put Alan Grayson in the House as chair and Elizabeth Warren in the Senate as chair.
Oh, still my beating heart. I am totally with you, Diva. Thank you for the call. You are absolutely right. That ain't going to happen, but I would love to see Howard Dean, chairman of the DNC, again. I mean, he did it once before. He knows how to do it. We'll be right back. Defending America from the weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you. Will in Blakesley, Pennsylvania. Hey, Will, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, how are you? I think I've actually talked to you about this before, but I think it's so important. It bears mentioning, and I know you wrote your book about it too, but the Democrats, there's a big gaping void in I guess the leadership of what they don't get, and it's psychology. It's psychology. And the Republicans have known this for years. They exploit it masterfully. And they don't have the Frank Luntzes, the think tanks. The Republicans know to talk to how people feel. They don't care what they think. They don't, frankly, they're so factless. And the Democrats have completely missed the ball on how angry and desperate and really how they're longing desperately for the truth. Just speak the truth.
Right.
And they also don't understand the oldest concept of sports in the world. The best defense is a good offense. They used to know this. You never answer anything without an attack. That is a cardinal sin that they
CLBJ, CFDR. Yes. Right.
Right. And what is it? I'm pulling my hair out whenever I hear even Obama does this. I love Obama. I really do admire the guy, but he's so tepid, and it's like I understand he's afraid of being labeled the angry black guy. God, I wish he would stop that. I'm angry at Obama because he doesn't show his anger. They are destroying our country, and he would have people on his side. He would get Republicans on his side if he would pull the FDR stuff. I am sick and tired of this. I am tired of watching my country go down the tubes. And I'm tired of people having their lives destroyed. It's got to stop, and I'm going to do everything I damn well can to stop it. He's afraid that if he says, "Oh, is he angry?" They're going to say that. I'm an angry white guy. I'm tired of my family being pillaged. You know. Anyway, it's the idea of psychology. They don't get it. You know?
And you're right. I wrote a book on this called "Cracking the Code," it's. Well, you know, we're all doing our best. Will, thank you for the call. Great to hear from you. Robert in Phoenix, listening on KPHX. Hey, Robert, what's up?
Just I wanted to follow up on what Ralph Nader was talking about. You know, I'm a PC here in Phoenix. And
what's a PC?
You know, I'm a precinct committeeman.
Oh, good on you, Robert.
Yeah, here in the Phoenix area.
Mm-hmm.
And I've already called for the resignation of our state party chair, all of our vice chairs, the county level chairs, because what had happened here in Arizona, when with the loss of all five statewide offices, is just unacceptable. You know, our party here has become so, I don't know if I should say lazy, but has accepted mediocrity here. Allowed the Republican Party in Arizona to walk all over us for the last four election cycles. You know, well, actually, I should go further than that. For the last 50 years, the Republican Party has had their thumb on the state since Barry Goldwater in 1964. But it's gotten worse over the last 20 years. I just don't understand how we as the party are not going after individuals like Evan Mecum back in the 80s and Fife Symington getting thrown in prison and a couple of other of our governors being forced out of office in disgrace. What is just not happening. And, you know, now we got to keep an eye on Doug Ducey because, you know, he's a corrupt individual. And unfortunately,
who's Doug Ducey?
Dark money won here. He's our new governor elect.
And he's a Republican.
Yeah, he's a Republican. He was our state treasurer, and he just won Tuesday night on the election for governor. And here's a crazy thing: the GOP even got a crazy teabag individual who just campaigned on ending Common Core. She's on the verge of winning the state school superintendent here in Arizona. And my question is, where was the party? The party is non-existent. We need to have a 15-county, 90-seat playbook. And unfortunately, we've allowed some of our Democratic candidates just to swing out there in the wind.
Well, that's all the bad news. The good news is, I mean, typically when people call this program to complain about the Democratic Party, that's all they're doing is they're complaining about the Democratic Party. They're sitting around going, pass me more popcorn, Marge. You're actually inside the Democratic Party. You actually made the trouble to show up. You participated in the party. You became a precinct committee person. So when you call for the resignation or the replacement or the, you know, change in policy or change in tone within the party, they're going to listen. They're going to pay attention to you. They have no choice. So, that's to me the really good news, is that people like you, Robert, are out there.
Well, and I put out a hashtag on Twitter. It's hashtag the fight for 2016 starts today. I posted that yesterday. And hopefully all the other Democrats in all the other states pick up on that. The fight for 2016 starts today, starts right now. And we need to hold our Democratic leadership accountable. And I'm glad to hear that Debbie Wasserman Schultz is out as DNC chair. She was just horrendous.
Oh, she's not out?
And
Steve Israel is out. Apparently, I was misinformed. Apparently, Debbie Wasserman Schultz is still around. Steve Israel is
still around. She needs to step down because she's allowed the GOP to.
She either needs to step down or she needs to change her message. And I'd be happy if they just changed their message, if they just went back to good old Democratic politics. Robert, thank you for the call, and God bless you for becoming a PC.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
If you haven't done what Robert did, if you haven't showed up at your local Democratic Party meeting and said, I'd like to participate, please consider doing so. Taking back the mainstream media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you. Talk media for the sane among us. Ken in Shippenville, Pennsylvania. Hey, Ken, what's on your mind today?
How are you doing, Tom?
Good.
You know, I was listening to your discussion with Ralph Nader earlier. You know, that makes a lot of sense. But you know what? Those are the issues that don't come to the forefront with the Democratic Party. I was a Democrat all my life, but you know what? I can't take them anymore. Because you know what? I'm a working man, okay? I'm not a special interest guy. I mean, I have no special interest other than...
Yeah, Ken, respectfully, if you're a working man, that is a special interest. It is the largest of the special interests, but it is a special interest. And, you know, I mean, odds are you're a Republican shill who's calling to say this, you know, oh, the Democratic Party's got nothing for me anymore. I'm a working man. Right. Right. This is what Republicans want Democrats to believe. I mean, this is the message that Republicans are putting out. I'm not buying it, Ken. Not buying it at all. Sheila in Tempe, Arizona. Hey, Sheila, what's up?
Hi. Yeah. I had a question for you. I've been listening and thinking about this very intently. And when you were talking about Al Franken and certain candidates in California, when they say more progressive values and they win overwhelmingly, how would that go over, though, in the red states? Maybe this is what the DNC is considering.
It would go over really well.
You really think so?
I really think so. Alan Grayson locked down his seat once more in Florida. I think that when progressives run on progressive platforms and progressive issues, I have talked to these Tea Party folks, you know, here in Washington, D.C. They come up here for, you know, they used to. Now the Koch brothers no longer pay for buses and airplane fares for them, so they don't show up anymore. But back when the Koch brothers used to fly them up here, I'd go down to the mall and talk to the Tea Party people from the South and say, you know, do you want Social Security privatized? Hell no! You want your Medicare to be a voucher, and you got to go out and find an insurance company that'll take you. And if you're sick, tough luck. No, are you kidding? Do you want more tax breaks for billionaires and taxes to go up on average working? No, are you kidding? I mean, the progressive values sell well everywhere in the United States. We are a center left nation, even in the South.
Even in a statewide office, for instance, Alan Grayson was just in one particular district in Florida.
No.
But you feel even in a statewide office in a red state.
Absolutely. I absolutely believe that to be the case.
Well, your opinion. I know you talked to that other gentleman from Arizona, and of course that's where I am, and we just got spanked. Republicans took everything, but they generally do anyway.
Yeah. Well, what he was saying, and he's actually inside the Democratic Party, is that the party's not standing up and speaking out. And this has been going on for 15, 20 years now. The Democratic Party has not been standing up and speaking out for things that traditionally the Democratic Party did. And the result of that is that we've gone from one-third of our workforce being unionized when Reagan came into office to 6%, 6 or 7% in the private sector, you know, 11% overall, which means that the average wage has declined, people are in debt. It's just, you know, all these things. Because the Democrats have not been standing up for the things that they should have been standing up for. They haven't been fighting for the things they historically have been fighting for. I was looking at CNN, the Chiron, and they said, you know, is Obama going to compromise on tax reform? Well, we all know tax reform. When a Republican says tax reform, they mean more tax cuts for rich people. Come on. Of course they're not going to cut. You know, the Republicans are not going to compromise on this. I guess the question is, you know, is Obama, trade policy, are they going to? These should be no-brainers. We need progressive politics, and populism, progressive populist politics work all across the country. Sheila, thank you for the call. I am absolutely certain that progressive politics will work in the South. Dennis in Lewisville, Texas, speaking of the South. Hey, Dennis, what's on your mind?
Yes, Tom, hello. I'd like to comment on the I don't think that without paper ballots in the United States, that we'll win another election in this country.
Boy, that's a tough one.
Honestly, believe that.
That's a tough one. You know, with a 4 or 5 point, in some cases 6 or 8 point spread between what the polls were showing and what the electronic voting machines showed in states like Georgia, which was 100% electronic voting machines, I don't have an answer for that, Dennis, other than that, whether the voting machines got hacked again or not, we should not have private for-profit corporations counting our vote. This should be something that is a function of government, and it should be done in a way that is totally transparent. And instead, it has been privatized, and that's a crime against democracy. Dennis, thank you for the call. Russell in Hickory Hills, Illinois. Hey, Russell, what's up?
Yes, Tom. I also wanted to bring up, we passed a 3% tax on millionaires to fund our schools. That passed by 75%.
In Illinois?
Yep.
In this election?
Yep.
Whoa.
That's what I heard. It passed. Not a millionaire, but then the fight's going to be with Browner. But
yeah,
I don't think so. We own 75% of the seats. But here's the other thing. What are we really losing, Tom?
Pardon?
She's never been a Democrat. Pryor's never been a Democrat. Heidi Heitkamp's never been one. Remember with the gun? She was the first one screaming no.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, they've never been true Democrats. And here's the sad part. You know, after she loses, we will not have a Democrat in a red state representing us.
We'll see. I think, right now, Hillary Clinton has an opportunity, and hopefully she's looking around and seeing what happens when Elizabeth Warren shows up in a state. She has an opportunity to recalibrate, which is something she's very good at. And I don't mean that as a slam. Good politicians are good at figuring out which way the people want them to go and going that way, because that's what you're supposed to do. The Constitution says we're electing representatives. We're not electing leaders. And they're supposed to represent us. They're supposed to know what we want, what, you know, the direction the country is going, and go that way. And Hillary Clinton has an opportunity now to become a progressive champion. And that, I think that all of our efforts, to the extent that we may have them and we have the ability, should be devoted to encouraging Hillary Clinton, assuming that she's going to run for president. I think it's a done deal. I mean, they got the committees, they got the fundraising, she's doing everything that you do when you're running for president, to run on a progressive platform. And then to govern on one if she's elected. And I think there's a good chance she would be. So, Russell, thank you for the call. I understand exactly what you're saying. Mark in White Plains, New York, but I'm not willing to say to any candidate, when I haven't heard their sales pitch yet, sorry, you're not good enough for me. I still want to hear what Hillary Clinton's platform is going to be. What's she going to run on when she runs for president? Mark in White Plains, New York. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Hey, Tom. How you doing? Long-time listener, first-time caller. Tom, I've heard you, and I want to thank you for the competence that you bring to conversation. I did download a copy of the Federalist Papers. Quite interesting, quite powerful, that Madison and Hamilton saw the melee and the maelstrom of factions that we see in this country now. But my first question to you is, if I may, why were not Sessions, DeMint, McConnell, Ryan, and Gingrich with their acts of sedition and treason, why weren't these men prosecuted? I mean, they have become the facilitators of the destabilization of our country. And A. Philip Randolph talked about it, saying, you know, the enemies of the nation would be the reactionary Republicans and the Dixiecrats.
Yep.
And none of the banksters, as you said many a time, none of them were prosecuted. And the Democratic Party wants the poor and the middle class to come out and vote. And I can't blame them for being cynical, Tom, because they have the most to lose. You know, they're losing time and work and everything else, but the leaders don't stand up and fight.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, Tom, we're starting to look like the beginnings of South African apartheid, and we've become a nation of arrogance, cynicism, indifference, and fear. Your thoughts, please.
I think you're right, Mark. I think you're absolutely right. And with regard to why the guys, by the way, Mitch McConnell was not in that meeting, but as to why the Republicans who were participated in the caucus room conspiracy have not been prosecuted, I had Newt Gingrich on this program last year. And I asked him, I said, here's how this meeting has been characterized by Robert Draper in his book. With the original title when it came out in hardcover was Ask Not What Good We Do. And then now in paperback, it's called When the Tea Party Came to Town. And I said, you know, and I read him this portion where Pete Sessions said we're going to be the Taliban and Kevin McCarthy says we're going to oppose every piece of legislation. And I said, you were there at the meeting. Is this true? And if so, what do you have to say for yourself, Newt? And he said, of course it's true. We're the opposition party. The opposition party opposes. It's our obligation to oppose. Now, the follow-up question that I didn't ask is, why did you not brag about this? I mean, you know, why did you keep this a secret? Why did it take 2.5-3 years for Robert Draper to dig this thing up as an investigative reporter and publicize it? It's just, you know, in the last year or so that Americans have learned that this conspiracy happened. And, you know, I think it's because they know that maybe politically it was the right thing to do, but morally it is just absolutely wrong. I don't think they can be prosecuted, Mark, because we have political free speech in this country.
Yeah, I understand that. But what they're doing, Tom, I mean, using words like terrorists and things like that.
Yeah.
I mean, we're sending our young kids over there to fight people that we're afraid of. And, you know, the enemies, remember the Constitution, as I'm sure you know many times, Professor, what does the Constitution say? Enemies of this nation, foreign or domestic.
Right.
They're domestic enemies of this country, and they're destabilizing our government.
Well, sort of. They're domestic friends of the billionaires and the transnational corporations. They are domestic enemies of working people, poor people, people of color, women. I mean, you know, come up with a list. Mark, spot on. Thanks a lot for the call. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
15 minutes before the hour, TomHartman.com. You can create your own blog. You can participate in our message boards. You can drop into our live free chat room. Welcome back. Omar in San Francisco, watching Free Speech TV on the website, freespeech.org. Hey, Omar, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to make a couple of comments, and I mean, it's pretty clear with the mainstream press what's going on, and it's certainly true that maybe one of the easy answers about the obviously ran poor campaigns, et cetera, that's all true. But again, one of the things that the mainstream press, specifically MSNBC, of course, another corporate entity, the myth is that they are so progressive. They did not ask the question, the elementary question, which is, why is it that with the GDP growth, a booming economy for the rich, a stock market at the all-time heights, the ACA, an obstructionist GOP that had no agenda at all, how is it with all that the GOP won these 7 seats? Instead, what MSNBC concentrates on, like everyone else, is this whole soap opera and repeating the GOP talking points that this election was somehow a referendum on Obama, which it certainly wasn't. Because as you pointed out, the candidates in the Democratic Party who touted Obama, who supported his agenda, who ran on his values and his policies and his accomplishments over 6 years, ended up winning handily. But the MSNBC asked the wrong kind of question. And of course, it's very deliberate. As far as I'm concerned, and another thing about MSNBC is you notice that they never or rarely ever
play progressive talk radio clips on their shows for discussion. They always play Rush Limbaugh, and then, okay, they respond to him and slam him. But they give Rush Limbaugh that platform, even as they slam him.
Right.
But they rarely play you, and they rarely play any other progressive talk.
Yeah, no, I've been essentially blackballed from MSNBC. You are not allowed to bring up international trade. You're not allowed to bring up net neutrality in particular on MSNBC because it's owned by Comcast, you know?
Right.
It's just
absolutely.
Cool. So
yeah, it's just a big myth that they're this progressive press company.
Well, they've got some decent shows and some good people. I think Melissa Harris-Perry is brilliant. I think that Steve Kornacki is really, really good. I think Rachel Maddow, I know Rachel personally. I have tremendous respect for her, both as a human being, as a progressive, and as a journalist. All that said, they work within an environment that is somewhat constricting, shall we say. And then, you know, we have to acknowledge, you know, most of the programming on MSNBC is not progressive. In the morning, it's Republican. Midday, it's just straight news. And after the prime time block, you go to prison. I mean, you know, which is their number one rated show, their prison documentaries. So
right. And here's one other thing really quickly to consider, too. People forget, or at least some people may forget, Phil Donahue was absolutely run out of there on a rail.
Oh, yeah.
Back in 2002.
Yeah.
When he talked about being against the Iraq war.
He sat here on this show 4 weeks ago talking about that.
Yes. Yes. And that's MSNBC. So yeah, absolutely. It's a corporate-owned entity. But my point, again, is the wrong questions are quite deliberately not being asked on that network in particular, all the networks, but especially that network that people tend to watch with the whole idea of, again, an obstructionist GOP, never had an agenda at all, never said anything about governing, and, you know, that with all this good prosperity and rebirth, at least for some people.
Yeah, the Democrats really fumbled the message. And part of it was because a number of their candidates were not actually running on Democratic issues. Omar, thank you for the call. You're spot on. We'll be back. Welcome back to the place where despair is not an option. Speaking the truth to multinational corporations, we'd really rather you didn't know all about it. It's Tom Hartman with you. Let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com, where you can give a goat to help a returning slave in South Sudan, and free-don.org, working to free Don Siegelman, the political prisoner. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, live in the basement of the White House. Hey, Ellen, how are you doing today?
Thank you so much. The briefing is actually has been going on, so I left it a few minutes early. A couple interesting things not related to the briefing. ICE, which is, as you know, Immigration Customs Naturalization Service through the Department of Homeland Security, just arrested a guy today in cooperation with the European police for starting Silk Road 2.0. As you remember, the first guy from Silk Road was, I think, arrested in San Francisco or thereabouts, and now they have another guy who tried to start up Silk Road 2 to get drugs and guns and all that kind of thing, and he was now arrested.
Yeah, Silk Road was basically this Wild West unregulated marketplace where you could buy things that everything from child porn to an AK-47. And, you know, the authorities didn't look kindly on that.
For sure not. Now, also, I have been yapping a lot about chikungunya virus, because no, it's not Ebola. It's not as fatal. However, old bats like us, 45 years and over, can keep symptoms for up to 2 years.
Yeah. Did you see the op-ed in today's New York Times?
No, I didn't, actually.
It's one of the 20 most emailed stories right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Big piece on it.
On chikungunya?
Yep.
Oh, my gosh, because I was just in Grenada, and I was applying this stuff 3 times a day. I was wearing long sleeves. Me, pants. When have you ever seen me wear slacks, you know? But I was wearing them.
Good on you.
Just because there are places in the Caribbean, they say at least 60%, according to the CDC, some of these islands have it. I was told, off the record, about 80% in some areas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Now, something very interesting. A guy by the name of Jason Heap, he has a degree in education. He has a master's of divinity. He has applied to the Navy to be a humanist pastor. They are rejecting him. I guess they reject people that they consider atheists. Yeah, he says that the humanism religion is a legally equivalent to belief in God or gods in other religious organizations, and so far nothing on that one.
Didn't the military once, I know that they've allowed, you know, Muslims and Hindus and whatnot, but didn't they once allow a Satanist, or was...
Well, boy, I mean, they very well might have. I'll have to look that up. I don't know of that.
Maybe not. Happen. Maybe there was just a court case or something that
okay,
I remember.
Now, back to the briefing. Today, apparently, there was a Wall Street Journal article that said that the president wrote a letter to the president of Iran. The White House would not confirm or deny it. They basically said they're not in discussion to discuss private correspondence. However, it seems as if Iran has been engaged around issues of ISIL because they don't like them very much. The White House also believes that they do have the bombing authorization based on what was passed in 2001 under the last President Bush. But they said they want to send a clear signal to allies and enemies alike that the legislative branch and the executive branch are in agreement.
On ISIS.
On ISIS.
Right.
On that particular issue. Okay. The president, they were doing a lot of talking today about what the president is going to do when he meets with the delegation. I guess there's 16 members of Congress. They're having a lunch. One member of the press said, well, what are they going to eat? And, someone said, well, they're going to eat crow. That's what they're saying. Now, there's some other issues that are going on. One is that they are hoping to get things done, as the press secretary said. They said maybe Republicans will change their tune. Maybe there will be common ground with the president. They also talked about various trade agreements. They did say that the Asian-Pacific trade agreement that the president had hoped to have wrapped up by his Asia trip next week will not be happening next week. They've agreed on most things, but they said they left the hardest things to contribute and to deal with at the end. So that hasn't been done. They also said that infrastructure is something that everybody they thought could agree on. Then came up this whole issue of the word Negro. As you know, the Department of Defense walked back. They're okay of that. That happened today. But apparently it has been on the books from basically the Office of Management and the Budget for 20, 30, maybe longer years, and the OMB is doing an investigation into it. What investigation do you need? You just need to wipe it out.
Yeah.
So that's also that's going on. Now, the other issue that is coming up is the issue of which the president addressed yesterday in his presser about whether people who didn't show up, what message that they were saying. What the White House is saying is that it does not reflect, that Washington, D.C. is not reflecting the priorities of those people, and they want to send, by not voting, a signal to Washington that they're not meeting their needs.
Right.
The White House said that the president is going to take an advocacy, focus, as he said yesterday in his press conference. And I'm kind of curious, Tom, Dr. Tom, as I always like to call you, what did you think of the president's press conference? Because even some Democrats I talked to this morning, talk show hosts, said they didn't think he was particularly good. I actually thought it was excellent.
I thought, you know, basically what he did is he dumped everything in the Republicans' lap. And, you know, which I thought was strategically brilliant. The Republicans, the right-wing talk show hosts are all hysterical about what he said. And so, you know, on the other hand, he said, I'm not going with Democratic ideas or Republican ideas. I'm going with ideas that work. And when he said that, I was wondering if he was basically saying, OK, the Democratic Party dissed me in this election. I'm not going to, I'm going to diss them.
Well, it'd be interesting to see what's happening. You know, I've been talking to some of the people, unions and other folks. They are not happy with how the election turned out.
Yeah.
And you're right. They want some cooperation from the president. There was much made by in the Washington Post today by Harry Reid's chief of staff. The White House is rejecting that as an issue.
Interesting. Okay. Ellen Ratner of the Talk Radio News Service, goatsfortheoldgoat.com, free-don.org. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
Great talking with you. We will be back.
listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Brad Friedman, publisher, editor, big cheese of the Brad blog, bradblog.com, is on the line with us. One of the best election sites out there, or at least election mechanism. You don't have so much of the standard mashed potatoes punditry. It's better. Brad Blog does a great reporting on voter suppression efforts and voting machines and all this kind of stuff. Brad, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Tom. I like to say that we focus less on the horse race and more on the track conditions at Brad Blog.
Well said. That's a brilliant metaphor. So what happened on Tuesday? How did our newly privatized, newly over the last, two decades, our newly privatized corporate-run voting machines and electoral system work nationwide on Tuesday?
Well, it failed voters in state after state after state, if that's what you mean by how did it work. We saw, as you and I have previously talked about this election cycle, of course, we saw touchscreen votes flipping in state after state, in North Carolina, Texas, Tennessee, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Maryland, Virginia, North Carolina, a bunch of close races could all have been affected by that.
Was this all Brad, was this all redshift, or was this flipping in both directions? Because the flipping in both directions is what I'm hearing in the corporate media.
While it did flip in both directions in some places, so far I'm seeing more flips from Democratic to Republican,
right,
as usual. That has historically been the case. There are cases, of course, where it goes from Republican to Democrat. We saw that in, I think, two states this year, Illinois and Maryland.
Yeah.
So it can happen, and I always caution that, frankly, it doesn't matter which way it flips. The fact is that voters can never know if those touchscreens actually recorded their votes accurately. So, I have a problem no matter who gets screwed by these systems. But,
right,
of course, it wasn't just the touchscreens. We saw all kinds of problems. For example, the electronic voter ID system in Florida went down in predominantly Democratic Broward County. That could have had an effect on the race, on the very close gubernatorial race down there. We saw missing registrations all over the country, some on purpose. For example, in Kansas, where the Republican Secretary of State Chris Kobach out there purposely kept some 20,000 registrations from being usable because the voters didn't include citizenship papers, even though they were not told to do so on the federal form. Some 50,000 registered voters in Georgia reportedly never made it into the system. That could have affected that senatorial race down there. States like New Mexico and Louisiana virtually shut down their motor voter registration programs under the National Voter Registration Act. So there's, paper ballots ran short in areas like Ferguson in St. Louis County, all over, which meant that the polls did not open in the morning. for a lot of people, and people simply weren't able to vote at all throughout the day because of it. And then, of course, there's the incredibly bizarre case of what happened in Chicago. Did you hear about this one, these robocalls in Chicago?
Oh, yeah, for the election judges. Tell us about that.
Over the weekend, right before the elections, some 2,000 or more election judges, essentially poll workers, received calls telling them that they needed to attend one more session before they could become an election judge, one more training session. And if they couldn't do that, don't bother to show up. Well, some 2,000 of them did not show up on Tuesday morning in Chicago. One-fifth of the workforce, if you will, in Chicago did not show up. Many polls could not open for hours because of this. We don't yet know who these robocalls were from and who they were targeted, although election officials there seem to say that it targeted one party. It doesn't say which party.
Right.
But, you know, again, you had this, you know, surprising result in the Illinois governor's race, where the Republican ended up unseating the Democratic governor there.
Well, if a lot of the votes in Chicago, if a lot of
open in Chicago, have an effect on that?
Yeah, boy, you want to suppress the Democratic vote, then just, you know, keep the polls closed for 4 hours on Tuesday morning in Chicago.
Yep, and that's.
That's what they did.
Exactly what happened. And, you know, I'm just sort of giving you a sampling of some of these. We got a lot more at Brad Blog. There's a lot more out there that I have yet to even be able to report on yet. And frankly, there's a lot that are still coming in. I always caution folks that, you know, we don't really know the extent of the problems, the inaccuracies in vote tabulation, problems that people had at the polls, et cetera. We don't really, you know that on election night. Sometimes it's the days, the weeks, even months after the elections before we can make sense of it, particularly when you've got a general election that takes place in 50 different states, you know, thousands and thousands of different voting jurisdictions around the country. And of course, we haven't even talked about the voters who have been suppressed thanks to these new photo ID voting restrictions in a whole passel of states this year. So,
yeah, the Brennan Center published a piece on that, suggesting that in several states, the margin by which Republicans won was smaller than, you know, the percentage that they won was smaller than the percentage of people who were turned away at the polls, because, like in Georgia, 40,000 people, their names didn't even show up, you know, who just registered to vote, or voter suppression, you know, the number of people who were turned away in Texas. I mean, I don't have the piece in front of me, so I can't tell you which states they were pointing out, but it's that sort of thing, that the voter suppression.
Okay. No, Virginia had a new photo ID voting restriction this year that could have affected that race out there. There was a whole passel of states where that could have had an effect, and in Texas, reportedly, we have twice as many provisional ballots as we had in the future, that after the Supreme Court allowed this photo ID restriction to go through in Texas, even though they know it's unconstitutional. So all of these things have a huge effect, which is why it's, you know, somewhat troubling to see Nate Silver, who I respect, coming out and saying, oh, the pollsters, the pre-election pollsters got it wrong. Even though they're all independent, there's dozens of them, they all found the same thing. It was the pre-election pollsters who got it wrong. It wasn't the voting system or the voting laws or the voter suppression. So that's a little bit troubling to me, actually, that, you know, that he makes that assertion this early and at least does not take into account all of these other factors that we've just run through very quickly here.
Yeah. Why do you think that the pollsters in state after state after state were showing that the races were neck and neck, and then when the electronic voting machine tabulations were calculated at the end of the day, the Republicans walked away with it in state after state after state? What accounts for that difference?
Well, a bunch of those items that I just mentioned very well could account for those differences.
Okay.
I mean, you know, the presumption that the pollsters got it wrong, I think, is exactly that. It's a presumption.
Right. It seems to me like that's the weakest of the arguments. But why is it that the corporate media is not talking about voter suppression? They're not talking about voting machines. They're not talking about the crime in Chicago. You would think that would be front page news.
Well, you would think that if you haven't lived in this country for the past decade. if you just came from another planet. I mean,
yeah.
That's what they do. They follow the horse race. pollsters, that's all horse race stuff. This other stuff, actually counting votes, actually pointing out to people that almost none of the ballots have actually been verified at this point. All of them are counted, almost all of them are counted by computers, even the paper ballots. They're tabulated either correctly or incorrectly. We don't know unless we count them by hand. We don't generally count any of them by hand.
Yeah. We had Bernie on the show yesterday. Yeah, we had Bernie on the show yesterday saying, enough with the electronic privately owned machines. You know, let's get back to paper. It is so spot on. Brad Friedman, editor and publisher of The Brad Blog. Bradblog.com is the website. Thank you, Brad.
Thanks, Tom.
Keep up the great work.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with more of my thoughts on the news of the day and your thoughts on my thoughts right after this. Boy, time flies. It's amazing. It's 15 minutes past 2 o'clock in the afternoon here on the East Coast in Washington, D.C., where it's starting to get dark early. I mean, right now it's just cloudy, but it's really remarkable. Winter is on its way. But the day is just flying by. Paul in South Lyon, Michigan. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind today? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. First, I wanted to agree with that last caller. I've been noticing for a while that MSNBC is pretty much a pretend progressive network. I think their function is to make us think that we have a progressive democratic network, but we really don't.
No, it's not that, Paul. Let's just be very clear about this. Just, you know, clear-eyed. The purpose of MSNBC is to make money for the family that owns Comcast. Period.
Right.
That's,
right.
You know, beginning and end of it. And you know, they will do they do what they do. And if they, as long as they're getting ratings and they're making money for the Comcast family, you know, they'll stay on, and if their ratings sag or if they're not doing well, then they won't stay on. And you know, it's anyway. Back to you.
Then why have they gotten rid of their top-rated progressives three different times? Phil Donahue, Martin Beshear, and Keith Olbermann. Every time they accidentally get a real progressive on, they find an excuse to get rid of them.
Well, I think it's because those people don't. Well, you know, Phil was making money for the Comcast. Well, actually, back then it was the GE. You know, General Electric owned the majority share. They're now a minority owner. Actually, Phil Donahue was threatening to hurt General Electric, the owner of MSNBC. He was threatening to hurt their economic interests because they make a lot of money on war. And we were ginning up for the war in Iraq. And, you know, they came down and said, you know, Phil Donahue won't shut up about, you know, anti-war stuff. So he's out of here. So, you know, right. We're back to my original point. It's all about the money.
Well, yeah, and did you hear about 3 weeks ago, the Republican Governors Association accidentally released the who their top donors were, and one of them was Microsoft, gave over $250,000 to the Republican Governors Association. Microsoft, of course, is the MS in MSNBC, so that shows you where they're real.
Well, yeah, yes and no. I'll bet they gave $200,000 to the Democratic Governors Association, too. They play both sides. All of these big companies play both sides of the aisle.
It hasn't come out. I bet against that.
Yeah. Okay. Anyhow, is that what you called about?
Actually, you were talking about the why the Democrats didn't get rid of the filibuster. Right. I think there's two reasons. Number one, it wouldn't have done them any good because the Republicans, the do-nothing Republicans, still had a stranglehold on the House. So right. What good does it do to get rid of the filibuster when the House is going to block everything you pass anyway? Because you might need the filibuster further on down the road, like right now. You know, to use against right. The Republicans.
And which is, by the way, the reason why there's a very good chance that Mitch McConnell will do away with the filibuster.
Yeah, right. Right. Wouldn't put it past him.
We'll see. I mean, you know, he's already talking about doing things like, you know, gutting Obamacare using reconciliation. Reconciliation is bills that have a budget associated with them. They have an appropriation associated with them. And those bills cannot be filibustered. So.
Right.
You know, it's like, you know, there's a way to do this. The Democrats could have been playing this game, you know, for keeps, and they did for 74 days. But anyway.
Do any good when the Republic? Do you think the Republicans would have cooperated in the House? Of course not.
No, you know? No. But, you know, during the first 2 years, they could have played much harder hardball than they did. You know, it's just the problem. The Democratic Party is just too nice. Paul, thank you for the call. 20 minutes past the hour. It's time for them to get a spine of steel and start playing hardball. Go back to, you know, LBJ dragging reporters into the bathroom to talk to them. You know, is slamming his political opponents up against the wall. Where is LBJ when you need him? Transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. Tom Hartman here on the place where smart people get their news. Bob in Marseilles, Illinois. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Well, I just wanted to emphasize the fact that ballot measures that passed
right.
are around the country. Everybody is commenting on the fact that there were five or six states that passed mostly advisory measures for minimum wage and other things. Here in Illinois, we had two constitutional amendments on the ballot, and they both passed. And one of them was basically an anti-ALEC bill that would amend the Illinois Constitution, and it passed by more than enough. I don't know if it's got to go through the legislature with a supermajority before it goes into effect. Basically, anything you do to change voting regulations that would be discriminatory against anybody that's protected would definitely not be constitutional in Illinois. It would eliminate about 9 out of 10 of the ALEC recommended voter regulations that are causing so many problems in so many places.
Right.
And if you could find somebody in Illinois that's a constitutional person that knows if that is definitely in effect now. And I'm calling because the one caller called in and mentioned that this might have been the last chance we had, that it might be the last chance where people's votes actually do count.
I don't think it's ever the last chance.
Well, I'm just wondering if in Illinois, because of that amendment that passed, even though Quinn didn't get in, if I might be one of the last people that actually gets a vote here in the state of Illinois.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody knows if that has taken effect just from the ballot initiative on the amendment. As far as I know, all it needed is 3/5 on the referendum.
Right, now, let me get this straight. This was an anti-ALEC ballot measure or a pro-ALEC ballot measure?
No, it was an anti-ALEC. Basically, what it said is the legislature could not pass a law that does what any of the ALEC voter ID laws do. You could not pass a voter ID law that inadvertently had a bigger effect on minorities or on low-income people or on women or anybody else that is actually protected. I don't believe it covered I got a feeling gays weren't in there, but just about everybody else was.
Yeah.
And basically, it was an anti-ALEC law, which is great. I don't think that any state should allow a legislative member to be elected.
Yeah.
That's ever been a member
Bob, I'm with you. Let me learn a little more about this before I go off on it. Shane is just looking it up right now. We're going to print it out. I'm going to read it during the break. Thank you for the heads up on that, Bob. I appreciate it. Bruce in Denver. Hey, Bruce. Bruce? Listening to Sirius in Denver? No. Mac in Kanoe, Hawaii. I'm mangling the town, aren't I?
Yeah, you are. It's Kanoe.
Okay, great. So, Mac, you wanted to point out that my use of the word ban on GMO planting in Oahu was the wrong word. I should have used the word moratorium. Do I have that right?
That is correct. And it's on the island. Actually, it's in the county of Maui. Maui County has only 160,000 people, and it is composed of a number of islands, Maui, Molokai, and Lanai, Molokai being primarily the farming island.
Right. I've been to Maui a bunch of times. There's fewer than 100,000 people in Maui?
No, 160,000 people.
Yeah.
In the whole county of those three islands.
Wow. I had no idea. Yeah. I thought Maui was much more populous than that.
Well, it's really because the towns like Lanai and
some other towns are rather concentrated. Wailuku, for example, they're concentrated.
And they're so full of tourists, they look busier than they are.
That's right. You have a lot of white lakes walking around.
Yeah.
Monsanto and Dow AgroScience spent about $800,000 for those 160,000 residents to vote no on the initiative.
Wow.
And they outspent the yes people about almost 90-1.
90-1?
I'm sorry?
90-1?
$90-$1, right, outspent.
And they still lost?
And they still lost. Of course, they're going to go to court now and say that the law is flawed. But it isn't. It just asks, you know, let's take a moratorium and see what the effects are.
Right.
And if Monsanto, and here's what Monsanto and Dow AgroScience don't like, is that any fines, any kind of enforcement of the initiative will be levied against the companies, not against the growers. But that's not the campaign they ran. They ran a campaign that said that it's against the growers and it's going to wipe. And they call their campaign that vote no on the ban on farming in Maui County.
Right. And it wasn't a ban. It was a moratorium, and it wasn't a ban on farming.
And
it was a ban on planting GMO product, or a moratorium on planting
GMO. Right.
Right.
Let's study it. Let's see what the effects are, and then come up with a reasonable way to control this,
right,
so it doesn't impact.
I think the biggest thing that they're afraid of is that, you know, I mean, it being discussed on my show is probably not a big deal for them, but they're scared to death that CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, ABC, CBS, NBC might talk about it. Because this is the first, this is the first big loss for these guys, and I don't know if the GMO labeling in Oregon has been adjudicated yet. I think they're still counting the votes there. But Mac, thanks for the heads up. Thanks for correcting my language and giving us the story. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you, and thanks for listening or watching there in Hawaii. We will be back with more of the Tom Hartman program right after this. Be sure to check out our new book, by the way, The American Revolution of 1800.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
It's a particularly prescient book because I think we're very close to the American Revolution of 2016, and I think it might play out on some of the exact same issues. Welcome back to the place where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say, no, not a chance. Come on, give me a break. John in Minneapolis. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I think that, you know, what accounts for the lower turnout is just that there's a lot of very disgruntled people with perhaps the Democratic Party because they drifted so far. I think it started with Clinton. They've drifted so far away from the issues that ordinary people, I mean, just to repeat what you've said and also what Ralph Nader has said, they've just drifted so far from the issues that ordinary people relate to. And, you know, also Barack Obama has failed to, you know, take the media by it. Maybe he could use his bully pulpit through press conferences because also Fox News, I think, has done a lot of damage in defining the issues and distorting the issues that people don't know what to believe anymore. And, you know, those are just two points that I wanted to make because the progressive message does resonate. Here in Minneapolis, Keith Ellison, I think last time he got 70%. I don't know if he got as much, you know, this time, but I'm pretty sure he probably did.
Right.
And it's not just all students from the land-grant college that we have here. It's a variety of people. And you know, Al Franken, I think he expanded his support by over 10%. He only won by, I think it was 300 votes last time. So, you know, this progressive message, they should be have confidence that this is really going to attract people because it seems obvious to me that it would, instead of backpedaling on it. And, you know, look at Mitch McConnell, that Alison Grimes wouldn't even admit that she voted for Barack Obama and she was a delegate.
I
mean, that's absurd. And
I know.
People,
I know.
I think they're just turned off by that.
I agree. I think that the Democratic Party blew it. A number of the Democratic candidates blew it. They should have been embracing progressive values, and they should have been embracing their president. And those candidates, like Al Franken, like you point out, who did embrace Democratic progressive values, traditional Democratic Party values, and their president, easily won. And expanded their percentage of victory. You're absolutely right. The big challenge, the big problem that the Democratic Party has with this, and this is where the Democratic Party has some serious soul searching to do, is if they adopt a Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren progressive message party wide, and they start seriously campaigning on a populist progressive message, they are going to lose hundreds of millions of dollars that they're getting right now from banksters, from big transnational corporations, from the Chamber of Commerce. Although I think that the Chamber of Commerce support for the Democratic Party has pretty much withered away. But you know, they somebody needs to tell them you're going to lose that money anyway. And, you know, they're just throwing bones at you. You need to dance with the people that brought you to the party. John, thank you for the call. Well said. Mike in Fairfax, Virginia. Hey, Mike, Danielle says you were trying to mansplain how women think to her. Really?
No. Let me explain. I two comments. One is a follow up to something you said earlier about reconciliation. You know, I think it would only be fair to repeal the bill based on the same way it was enacted. It went through on reconciliation, and then in the House there was no debate. It was a demon passed bill. They stuck it on as another rider and voted on it. So live by the sword, die by the sword,
what?
And get repealed the same way.
Are you talking about Obamacare?
Yep.
That was originally passed with 60 votes. It was amended by reconciliation.
Exactly, but it was required to be amended by reconciliation.
Well, of course.
Yep.
It's because Scott Brown got elected and Harry Reid lost his veto-proof majority in the Senate. I mean, what do you expect?
All I'm saying is the Health Care and Education Reconciliation Act is really what put the bill into effect and provided the funding. So that went through on a reconciliation process. So to defund the bill the same way it was enacted would be perfectly legitimate.
Oh, I'm not saying it's not legitimate. I'm just saying that I think that the millions of Americans who right now are, you know, who have a medical history. And in the past, health insurance companies have said to them, yeah, we'll cover everything except for that, you know, fill in the blank, you know, except for that hepatitis C, except for that breast cancer, except for that ulcer that you've had, except for that, you know, broken leg that you once had. We'll cover everything except that. And by the way, if you get really sick and it costs more than $1 million, we're going to cut you off and you're screwed. And by the way, if we don't like, you know, you as a customer, we can simply just, it's called rescission. We can simply just dump your policy. I think and the millions of Americans who had no health insurance whatsoever, who now have health insurance because of Obamacare, whether it's, you know, through subsidies on the exchanges or whether it's through the expansion of Medicaid in those roughly half the states in the United States where Democrats are in charge and everybody can be insured, as opposed to the Republican-controlled states, where now, according to Harvard University, 17,000 people will die this year because Republicans who have no soul, Republicans who have no morality, Republicans who don't give a damn about the lives of the American people. They just want to play politics and support the billionaires and the big corporations. They just want to make sure that Stephen Hemsley still gets his billion-dollar paycheck over UnitedHealthcare. These people don't give a rat's ass about Americans, period, unless they're rich or unless they're corporations. These Republicans have the blood of 17,000 people on their hands. I don't know why Charlie Crist did not campaign in Florida on Charlene Dill, the young woman who knew she was the mother of three. And she knew that she had a heart condition, and it could be controlled with a simple medication. It was just a very expensive medication. And she was cleaning houses for a living. She was working three jobs as a housekeeper. And she could not afford her medication, and she died. And this, how can you say anything more than that? I mean, you know, it's Rick Scott has blood on his hands. I don't know why Charlie Crist wasn't running ads saying Rick Scott has blood. He's got Charlene Dill's blood on his hands, and the Republican Party has another 17,000 people's blood on their hands right now, this year. And it'll be another 17,000 next year if they continue the obstruction of this. These people are sociopathic SOBs who don't give a damn about human beings, and they need to be called that. And if any other Republicans want to call and try to defend that, good luck. I'll put you at the top of the line. Pam in Panama, oh, the country of Panama in Central America. Hey, Pam, what's up?
Yeah. Hi, I'm actually in Las Guias, Panama. I'm in the interior of the country. I'm a semi-retired person living down here. But one thing I wanted to say was I heard Ralph Nader, and I kind of like Ralph Nader, but the problem is they don't recognize race is the main problem with these people. Once Jim DeMint left the Senate, and went working in South Carolina for his little group or whatever, they knew exactly what they were going to do. They were doing a strategy to make sure that they were going to get rid of this man, and they wanted us to suffer so another black man would ever become president again.
Yeah.
And I was listening to you, you know, when you were, I was waiting. You know, it's interesting. I haven't heard many people say much about Mitch McConnell and his father-in-law with the cocaine down here in Colombia. It was in the Nation magazine.
Really?
I think his name was, Jim Fong, I think. It was on Amy Goodman's show.
Huh.
But, you know, this guy had $6.7 million worth of cocaine in his ship. Okay? Elaine Chao, Miss Perfect, standing up there with him.
Right.
And he got all this cocaine in the ship. Nobody even mentioned it. Allison, I even tried to email and send Allison Lundgren Guns or whatever her name is.
Yeah.
I tried to send that to her because it's like, come on, you guys are letting this guy sitting here smiling and grinning, and his father-in-law, who donates a lot of money to him, he's got $6.7 million worth of coke from Colombia in one of his ships.
Wow. Amazing. Pam, thank you for the call, and thanks. I agree with you. I think that a substantial, I don't know if it's a majority, but I think a substantial chunk of the Republican the animus that Republicans across this country, and particularly in the South, have against this president is because of his race. I absolutely believe that. Pam, thanks for the call. Cliff in Canyon Country, California. Hey, Cliff, what's up?
Greetings, Dr. Tom. I was going to call tomorrow about another subject. However, when I heard your plea for Hillary to change her platform or become more progressive, I had to respond.
I'm not asking her to. I'm asking people to push her to. It's a different thing.
Oh, I got it. But I hope that happens. I'm quite skeptical that.
Well, you can play a role in that.
Well, let me just lay out my backstory here. I mean, you know this, Tom, about Hillary getting $200,000 to speak to the Carlyle Group.
Sure.
A year or so ago, she also in June, the end of June, she spoke to the largest trade organization of biotech firms, like in San Diego, and
yeah.
She was endorsing the GMO seeds. In the 80s, she worked at the Rose Law Firm, and they represent Monsanto and Tyson Foods and these huge corps.
Yep.
She had Bill Clinton had an advisor and a chief strategist for Hillary in 08 named Mark Penn, and he's the CEO of one of the largest PR firms that represents Monsanto.
I'm familiar with all that, Cliff, and the fact that Hillary was on the board of Walmart for years. That doesn't mean that she can't change. I'm skeptical that she will. But I think that, you know, if you want to see Hillary change, go participate in her campaign. You know, show up. Cliff, thank you for the call. 15 minutes before the end.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I think it would be an amazing thing if a lot of progressives signed up with the I'm here for Hillary campaign and then just started raising absolute hell inside the campaign. Welcome back. Gorky in Rochester, New York. How you doing, my friend? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Yeah, hello, Tom. I think a lot of it has to do with the letdown we've gotten from the beginning. His failure to go after the previous administration for lying us into war in Iraq.
Right.
Then Nancy Pelosi gets up there on the pedestal and says, we're not going to look back. We're going to look forward. And his unwillingness to fight. I mean, in 2009, you talked about that meeting where they got together and said, we're going to stop government. That should be a crime right there. Although you don't believe it is, I believe it is. It's sedition.
Yeah.
You got a small group of men in a room talking about bringing down a country financially and stopping the wheels of government from working. That's a crime. And they should have been prosecuted.
Well, the alien sedition laws. The alien sedition laws were taken off the books. They were put on the books once for 2 years in 1789, and they, 1798, and they vanished in 1800, the day that Thomas Jefferson was inaugurated. And they were put on the books in, 1917, 1918, by Wilson, right? Woodrow Wilson, yeah, during World War One, and they were taken off after the war was over. So I don't, you know, I think that there's some general sedition law, but I don't think that what has been done is sedition. I mean, I think it's morally sedition, but I don't think it's legally sedition.
Well, then he heard about the meeting they had and his willingness to work with them after that.
Yeah.
You know, they just told you, we're going to kill you. We're going to assassinate your administration. We're going to blow it up. And then he reaches out his hand across the aisle and says, you know, can we get this through? And they tell him no. We voted for somebody who was willing to fight. And he's backed down at every given turn. I mean, there were a couple of successes we had, but the fight over the budget, he finally stood his ground and Ted Cruz shut the government down.
Yeah.
But we were willing to stand behind him no matter what he had to do.
Yeah. The last 2 years are going to define his legacy, Corky. And we'll see. If Bill Clinton went corporate in his last couple of years because he was trying to keep the door open for his wife, and Barack Obama, you know, Michelle Obama has no intention of running for the United States Senate. Obama is in a position right now, if he really is a progressive or has any progressive bones in his body at all, he still has considerable power. He's president of the United States. He's the chief executive of one of the three branches of government, the only branch of government that basically has one guy in charge of it. And that's tremendous power. And he's been there long enough to learn how to use that power. And if he hasn't figured it out, he can read a good biography of Lyndon Johnson or for that matter, you know, Harry Truman or Franklin Roosevelt. And, you know, I am hopeful that he will do so. We will see. The next 2 years are going to be really, really interesting for all of us. And I think the election of 2016 now, the stakes have just doubled. The stakes have gone up so high.
Well, you see, another thing the Democrats made a mistake on was how they advertised.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's how I started this program two and three quarters hours ago, was saying that, the Democrats totally blew the message. They should have been campaigning on their platform, basically, instead of campaigning on, you know, everything all over the sun. You know, it's tragic. Corky, thank you for the call. We'll be back. It's 10 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and John in Newark, Delaware. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Listen, I got a couple concerns, but one of them is, why, as Democrats and progressives, we're not fighting these issues or pursuing them, having them investigated for all these voting irregularities. You know, in both of the George W. Bush elections for president down in Florida, then in Ohio, the vote was really questionable whether he actually won those races. And when you look at all these close races, including the governor's races, and you look at the polls, and they were fairly close, and almost invariably every case, the Republican came out winning, and in larger margins. Statistically, that is odd.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And we've got a serious electoral problem in the United States, and it's not people from Mexico voting illegally. It's or black people voting illegally, however that happens. But the Republicans are convinced it happens. The problem is that our system has been privatized and it's now basically rigged. The game, the voting game is as rigged as the banking game. And this is a message that needs to get out there. And, you know, God bless Bernie Sanders and a number of other people in the Progressive Caucus who have all come out against electronic voting machines and said, let's go back to paper. Let's see, it works fine. And we can have a system that works. John, thank you for the call. Well said. Andy in Lebanon, Pennsylvania. Hey, Andy, what's up?
Yeah, you'd mentioned that Charlie Crist should have campaigned on the blood on Rick Scott's hand. I have a few other things that should have been campaigning on. Number one, frivolous filibusters in the United States Senate. Okay?
Yep.
Then you've heard of a kangaroo court before. How about a kangaroo ethics committee in House of Representatives run by a guy who steals a car? It's a kangaroo committee. They just constantly investigate President Obama.
Yeah, you're talking about Darrell Issa, yeah.
Yeah. Also, the obstruction to job creation. You know, the jobs would have come back to us twice as fast as the Republicans not obstructed so many jobs during the past 6 years.
Yep.
And how many people lost their homes because Republicans obstructed job creation? You know, you take a 10-year-old kid whose parents bought the house 8 years ago. That house is his universe. It's his world. And the dad loses his job. They lose the house. That kid, what's he going through by watching what his parents go through?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's like a lifetime of PTSD. You're absolutely right. This is why I say the Republicans don't give a rat's ass about anybody in this country except rich people. And it's wrong. Andy, thank you for the call. George in Chicago. Hey, George.
Yes, I'm listening on the great WCPT, Chicago's Progressive Talk.
And a fine station it is.
It's the best.
I agree.
Not only because it broadcasts my mentor, Tom Hartman, but in relation to what I believe you said pretty consistently in the past, and correct me,
George, you're breaking up so badly, I can't tell what you're saying. Are you calling on a Skype phone or something?
No, this is not a cell phone. Can you hear me any better now?
No, it's really breaking up bad. I'm going to drop your call and try calling right back. And if Danielle, we've got a couple of open lines. Danielle will catch it, and we'll try to get you back on. But it's so bad that it needs to be redone. Vanessa in Daly City, California. Hey, Vanessa.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Good. You wanted to talk about a GMO labeling measure?
Yeah, I heard that the Colorado and Oregon, they didn't pass.
Okay.
Narrowly didn't pass, unfortunately.
Okay. I've been meaning to look that up before I went on the air today. I never got around to it. In fact, I had to go to the dentist.
But good news in Berkeley, the beverage tax passed, and the beverage company poured gazillions into San Francisco and Berkeley to try to defeat that.
Right, and the beverage industry lost.
They lost, except in San Francisco, more people voted for it, but unfortunately, they needed 2/3 for it to pass.
Ah, okay.
And what's funny is the beverage company guy got on TV and said, well, Berkeley's a small town. Nobody listens to Berkeley. And I'm like, well, San Francisco isn't.
Right. Well, and Berkeley's not a small town. Berkeley's an iconic town, actually, in America. It's where the free speech movement started. Thank you very much for the call, Vanessa. Great to hear from you. George in Chicago. Trying again, George?
I'm hoping this is a better connection.
Perfect.
Yeah. I hope you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe you've pretty consistently advised callers who identify themselves as Green Party members that their best course of action is not to work at establishing a separate party and running separate candidates, but that they should infiltrate the Democratic Party.
Actually, I advise people to do both.
Well,
I think that the Green Party has done a lot of good in this country, particularly at the local level, getting instant runoff voting across the country. You can be a member of both the Green Party and the Democratic Party. And then, you know, if you've got a national election or even a local election where it's going to be tight, it's going to be close, you vote for the Democrat. If it's not going to be tight or close, vote for the Green. That's when I lived in Vermont in 2000, I voted for Ralph Nader. Because I knew Al Gore was going to take Vermont.
Well, precisely the point you're making is about a point I was going to make. Post-election polling and analysis in Florida indicated that of the 90,000-plus voters who voted for Ralph Nader, about half said that they either would not have voted or would not have voted for anyone for president if he had not been running.
No, Nader did not take the election for George Bush. What took the election for George Bush was...
I disagree, Tom. 80% of the remainder said they would have voted for Gore.
But see, it doesn't matter. The Ralph Nader's votes would not have happened if Jeb Bush had not directed Catherine Harris to remove 90,000 African Americans from the voting rolls. And then on top of that, if you read the New York Times, who actually counted all the ballots in Florida, it was a year later. It was a month after 9/11. And so they buried it in the 17th paragraph of the article. But what they said was, if you count all the ballots in the state, which is what the state Supreme Court had ordered, which the Supreme Court stopped, if you counted all the ballots in the state, by any measure, overvote, undervote, dimpled Chad, hanging Chad, pregnant Chad, intent of voter, not intent of voter, by any measure, Al Gore won Florida in 2000. You can read it in the New York Times. It's right there. George, thanks a lot for the call. So, you know, Ralph Nader did not take the election from George W. Bush. I get it. You know, if it's a tight race, go with the Democrats. And I think the Green Party has something to say. But we need to be participating in the Democratic Party. We really need to be. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.